with Scott Allen.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this beautiful world. I am your host, Scott J. Allen, and this is Phronesis, Practical Wisdom for Leaders. Now, I am a professor of management at John Carroll University in Cleveland, Ohio, USA. In addition, I'm a husband and father of three teens. Now, this is a family endeavor. Will played the intro, Kate voiced the intro, and who knows, you may hear from Emily a little later. I'm also an author, entrepreneur, speaker, and co-founder of the Collegiate Leadership Competition. I love to travel, explore new places with family, and learn from others. Phronesis offers a smart, fast-paced discussion about all things leadership and followership, if we're honest. My guests are scholars and practitioners, and we cover relevant topics and incorporate practical tips designed to help you make a difference in how you lead and live. I am proud to share a few updates. According to Listen Notes, Phronesis is listed as among the top 3% of podcasts in the world because of you. So thank you. In addition, the podcast has two sponsors. First, Phronesis is the official podcast of the International Leadership Association, an association that is near and dear to my heart. ILA brings together leaders and those who teach, study, and develop leadership, advancing leadership knowledge and practice for a better world. Learn more at ila-net.org. My second sponsor is the Bowler College of Business at John Carroll University. At Bowler, we offer several advanced degrees and MBAs, and I'm confident that there's one that will fit your location, interests, and timeline. In fact, our online MBA is ranked as the number one in Ohio and number nine in the United States. We offer international study tours, a contemporary and forward-looking curriculum, and access to senior leaders and flagship organizations. Learn more at business.jcu.edu. You can find links to both sponsors in the show notes. Now, if you like what we're up to, please hit subscribe so you can stay current as we release new episodes each week. You can also share what we're up to with others, friends, colleagues, leaders, teams, students, and others you think will benefit. And now, today's show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Phronesis podcast. Thank you so much for checking in wherever you are in the world. Today, I have a longtime friend, and that is Rick Koster, and he is in the Netherlands. He founded Leaderscope in 2013, a network of leadership trainers, coaches, and facilitators who develop courageous leadership to transform teams, organizations, and systems. Rick has a background in ecology, neurobiology, leadership, and communication skills development. He specializes in developing and guiding transformative leadership programs, leadership team guidances, and designing processes for strategy development. He works in the Netherlands, where he lives, in Europe and Africa. Leaderscope has a broad range of diverse clients from large corporate organizations, many of them in food, schools and universities, health organizations, and local and national governments. This is what Rick loves, diving into an organization, understanding how the system works, and seeing what is needed for positive change. Some of the leadership programs Rick and his team have developed and delivered are the Nudge Global Impact Challenge and the European Nutrition Leadership Program. Rick is also an established contributor to the programs of the Academy of Leadership, Avicenna, in the Netherlands. Rick, did I say that correctly? Avicenna?
Oh, yeah, definitely, Scott. Your Greek is improving. Scott, it's so good to see you again and talk to you.
Oh, Rick, I am so excited for this conversation. I really am. I said this to Anne-Marie when she was on the podcast, and when I think of you, I think of laughter. I think of the many, many fun, wonderful dinners and meals that we had together at ILA conferences, just laughing for hours, if I recall correctly. And it's so good to connect with you again. What else, really quickly, before we jump in, do listeners need to know about you, sir?
Well, thank you, Scott. And just let me remember one moment that we had, indeed, with full of laughter, because it was one dinner that we have, and I can really see you again, sitting there at the table. And I loved how you tried to pronounce Cabernet Sauvignon. You tried so hard to pronounce it, and everybody in the whole restaurant should know about that. I love that. And I think it was also why I remember it. It's because I saw someone, in this case you, who really felt liberated, felt free to express whatever was needed, was in the moment. And I think that was so beautiful about that moment.
Kind of like when I'm trying to pronounce Avicenna.
Exactly. That's what remembered me of, yeah. So indeed, I think that much of my work and our work at Leaderscope is about liberating potential. At least we try to do that. And it is within leaders, within teams and organizations. And also we try to liberate systems, which is quite difficult, of course, but that's what we do. And I love doing that. I love when you go into a team of leaders, and you see something happening in this team, and then, you know, certain interventions really make them become more free and more open and being able to work together again. Because sometimes you come into teams, you think, wow, how could such intelligent, bright people make such dumb mistakes? And that's really crazy, you know, with all these bright people and they have the best intentions, and then they come together and this happens. And I think that there's so much potential that we can tap into.
Well, I love that phrasing, Rick, liberating potential. So, you know, the organization's about 10 years old now. I think as you think about that decade of work, you know, really interfacing with people all over the world, and you think about this kind of mission of liberating potential, what are some ways you think about doing that work? How do you go about liberating potential? I think it's kind of fascinating.
So the first thing is really to observe what's going on in a team or in an organization. So indeed, I love to go into an organization and also in these different kind of organizations to see, so how does it work here? How do you become popular? When do you get compliments? When do you get punished? And I mean not punished, but punished in the sense of, okay, so you make a joke, you know, nobody's laughing. That's also kind of punishment, isn't it? Thank you for laughing. So I think that we all sense that, right? We come into an organization. I think this is also why we are so tired the first time we get into a new place. We get into a new job and we really want to figure out, how does it work here? Do I bring you a coffee or do you drink a coffee by yourself at your desk? So I think that's the first thing that I always, you know, I go into an organization and I sense this. And then you see, okay, so where does it really flow? Where's the freedom and where is it stuck? And for instance, I had a team of senior leaders, was in a health organization, and we were 5 minutes into this conversation, quite a large team of 17 people. So the director, she said something and I said, okay, is there anybody who wants to add something? And this dead silence started. Nobody said anything. And then, okay, well, then I give the word to Rick to start off this session, you know? And you think, wow, there's already so much said without anything being said in that moment.
Beautiful.
Yeah, at that moment, we couldn't really grasp it, but later on, we could really work with that.
Well, it really is fascinating, to your point, if you slow down and just pay really close attention to the dynamics, even the smallest of dynamics within the culture. But to your point, when the leader or the authority figure asks a question or there's a conversation that's happening and no one has any feedback, I mean, that just in some ways tells you everything. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
When you walk into the organization, you're paying really, really close attention to kind of the culture, the dynamics, some of the nonverbal behavior that really, really sings, right? And what else? Yes. Kind of liberating potential, part of the process of kind of that work.
Yeah. So the three more or less steps or phases in the process that I use is connect, pause, create. So we start with that connection, which is so important. So all kinds of ways to connect deeply, more deeply with each other. And it could be one-on-ones, it could be in the whole team. And I did many trainings in deep democracy. Have you known about deep democracy, Scott?
No, I don't.
So deep democracy is a way of thinking, philosophy, a way of looking at organizations and teams, in which you look at the texture of an organization, the fabric of an organization. So not what is happening in people, but between people.
Wow.
And yeah, it's really beautiful. It's actually derived from Ubuntu, which is an African way of philosophy. And this philosophy says, I am because we are. I think that's such a strong wording. I am because we are. So I can only be somebody with you. So without you, I am nobody. And of course, this is For us in the Western world, it's a little bit difficult because we say, I have my talents and I have my potential and I can grow and I have competencies. So we're really looking at our authentic selves. And I think that there's value to that. But from the Ubuntu perspective, it's only between us that something is really happening, that I am also there.
Wow.
And from that perspective, you have all kinds of ways of working. So one is, and I really love doing that, is we call the soft shoe shuffle. And the soft shoe shuffle is a way of working in which you stand into a circle and then you say, okay, so if everybody wants to say something about this subject or this question, please step forward. And then when they're finished with what they have said, everybody is forming around this person based on if they agree, they're going to stand behind them, or if they recognize what has been said, or they're going to stand somewhere else in the room. And in that sense, if you do this, you get a really good feeling of the system of this community or of this organization or team. And that is so powerful to do that.
Oh, that's wonderful. So connect, right? That's kind of step number one, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then you go to the cause. So what is the cause? What is the purpose either of this team or the purpose of the organization, depending? So how can we really connect to something that is bigger than us? So we really search for that purpose and we look for the passion in the team to really connect to that cause. And if you do that, you get far more chances to create. And in create, you really, you start co-creating, creating. So a lot of design thinking principles then come into play. And of course, when you do that, you understand better what is our cause because you're acting on it. So you better understand the cause, but you also connect more. The sign for Leaderscope is also the infinity sign from connect, cause, create, and then back to cause and then to connect again. And this goes on and on.
Well, first of all, I love the visual that on your website is just there because I think it's a beautiful visual for what you're doing. So this connect, cause, create. What's the most challenging of those three phases? Is it connect, Rick? I mean, is it that I think oftentimes in organizational life, maybe we don't pause. It's so focused on create and just go and do that at times I think we can lose that connection and we can lose touch at times with the cause, with why we're doing what we're doing. But in your experience, what are you seeing? What are the most difficult kind of components to really get to? Or does it just depend on the context?
Yeah, it probably will. And yet what you're saying, that was my first thought as well. To connect is the most difficult. Really, truly connect with each other. And of course, the work of Amy Edmondson, psychological safety, is at play there. So how do you create this feeling of really, I belong here. I have a place here. I am respected. I'm seen. And I also can see the other persons. And if that happens, if you can liberate that potential, well, it's also easier to look at your cause and also much easier to create. So I agree with you that that's the most important phase. And it's always the balance between, okay, so how much time does an organization or a team allow on spending on the connect? Mm-hmm. Because of course they'll say, well, but we also have our deadlines and we need to, and all these changes come, but we also really need to connect first and slowing down to really understand.
Well, Rick, I really enjoy how you're phrasing this. I had a conversation a few months back with Jennifer Garvey Berger, and she's just an incredible thinker. I would ask listeners to go ahead and check out that episode. But she had a phrase in our conversation. She said, good leaders design for connection. Good leaders design for connection. And you had mentioned kind of design thinking principles. And that's one thing I just love about you is that your background is so varied that you're bringing, whether it's concepts from communication or biology or design thinking. I mean, all of that is kind of coming to the work that you're doing. But yeah, that just stood out for me. Good leaders design for connection. And I was with a group not too long ago, and it was just beautiful. I know you've experienced this, Rick, when probably 2 hours in, one individual said, well, I think what we really need to be discussing. And then it started. And we got to the real breakthrough conversation that needed to occur. But that connecting, there's a shell that you have to break through. That, to your point, that psychological safety It's just, we're so focused on the creating, create, create, create. As you mentioned, deadlines, deadlines, deadlines. I think sometimes, you know, I can only bring so much of myself if I'm kind of guarded and that connection doesn't exist, right?
I fully agree, Scott. And great how you mentioned this breakthrough moments, because this is also in the work of deep democracy that I learned from this way of thinking and looking, is going to that place where this can happen. And I love the phrase from this work saying, what you're doing as a facilitator is you kiss them over the edge. I think that's so well put, because that's the feeling also that I have. So I go into this group and you feel it, and then you see, okay, can we give them small nudges? And then suddenly somebody says something so beautiful, like you said, well, we all know we should be talking about.
Yes.
And when that happens, you know, you feel this way, you feel also relief in the team, you know, somebody is finally saying it.
Yes.
And it takes a lot of courage to do so. And I think that that's also what we're at Leaderscope are looking for, is courageous leaders who also, you know, facilitate these kind of processes within their own organization.
It's so fascinating to, at times, Rick, look at the divide between the literature and what's actually happening in organizations. I mean, in the textbook or in the popular press kind of publication about leadership or whatever the topic is, it's so easy. Just, you know, have the difficult conversation. And here's the five steps. And, you know, add humans and real people and salaries and livelihoods and status and power and authority, and add all of that to the mix. And it's really just so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. It also comes to when you go into a group or an organization, and this is all at play in this, you know, this system, it asks a real lot of you. So I have a new team that I'm going to meet for the first time tomorrow. And I'll be spending the whole morning to prepare myself to be there with the right energy, to really be present and with the right courage. And of course, I have my own systems that I bring with me. And sometimes I'm a little bit shy, so I don't say exactly what I need to say. So I need to bring in the courage by myself as well. And sometimes I can be over-optimistic. So I also need to, you know, it's that right balance to really be present. And that costs a lot of energy. But when it happens, you know, that's so beautiful. It feels so alive if you can liberate such a group.
Would you talk a little bit about that, Rick? Because I think you said something really beautiful there about how you prepare yourself to be present, to help with the work. I think at times, even I can be running from thing to thing to thing, and I don't often give it the attention it requires, whether that be working with a client, whether that be walking into a classroom and truly slowing down and being present. To your point, you're going to spend some time tomorrow preparing yourself to be at your best to work with a group. What's part of your system there?
Yeah. So working on your pitfalls, I think, is one of the most important things. So I tend to over-prepare. So I'm going to look at my slides tomorrow, and what am I going to say, and make the slides even more beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that this is a pitfall, because that's not really helping.
Yes.
In the end, it's not helping me be at my best. So I need to tomorrow remind myself, okay, you don't need to do this. This is good enough. Slides are good enough. Your story is good enough, and really be present. So that's one of the pitfalls. And then, okay, so what do I need to do? One of the things that I do is meditate. I really like the app Calm.
Yes.
I really like the voice of the one who's doing that. And the daily Calm, it's 10 minutes. And she just starts bringing you into this mode. Then there's silence for about 4 or 5 minutes. And then she has a kind of a roundup on the theme that it is about. And it really helps me to slow down and to feel centered again. So meditate, be aware of your own pitfalls, and see how you can be with the right energy, be present. So this is also connection already started long ago before I entered the room, the connection with the group, because I'm also imagining myself, okay, is this kind of groups, this amount of people, men, women, what kind of background do they have? So I really go through them to really connect with them before they enter the room. So that's connection has already started in that sense.
Oh, that's just wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. I love the framing there. I have not used Calm. For listeners, I will place a link in the show notes. I do like a 20-minute transcendental meditation a day. You're supposed to do it twice a day, but I know I can do it once a day, most days. And so I just try and do that 20 minutes. So I 100% kind of appreciate what that is for you. I think for me also getting out in nature and getting on a walk, that can help kind of center, ground me. But I don't do a good enough job of, again, I might just be kind of going from one thing to another to another. I have one of those days today where, you know, we are talking at my time about 7:30 a.m. and right. I have class until 9:30 p.m. tonight, 9:15.
Wow.
And it's meetings much of that day. And so to even have 2 or 3 minutes to just pause in between, slow down, recenter, and ensure that I'm at my best. Otherwise, I don't necessarily walk in with that intentionality. But I love how you phrase that. You know, the connection has begun long before I arrive.
Right, exactly. Yes.
And you know yourself, yeah. Right? You know what some of your pitfalls might be that you're going to over prepare and, you know, because you want it to go well. But look, I need to slow down, not be prepared, but not over prepare, center myself. Right. And ensure that I'm in the right headspace with the right energy before even moving in. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So we have the connect and then cause. Let's go there for a moment. I had a wonderful conversation with Henry Mintzberg, and he talks about societies being out of balance. And I think sometimes this conversation is helping me get to the point where, of course, individuals can be out of balance, but I think then teams can be out of balance as well. If we're not connecting and we're not tapped into the cause, well, we're creating a lot, but we're out of balance. So what are some ways that you kind of tap people back into the cause?
One of the things that I do often is I ask people, they go out in pairs, they go for a dialogue walk.
Nice.
And I let each other interview each other, and they ask them each other about talents. What is your strength? What is your talent that you bring? And about passion. So what is your passion for doing what you do? And they have this beautiful conversation, because in that beautiful spot where your passion and your strengths come together, that's where you're going to make impact.
Wow.
So they go out, they talk to each other for about 45 minutes to 20 minutes interviewing one, and then they change. Then they come back, and then they have to present the other person. So I ask them, so I have the honor to present to you Scott Allen. And then I'm going to tell them about your strength and your passion. So I'm really honoring you in that sense. But if I do that in front of the whole group, then everybody get a sense again, oh, this is what Scott is about.
Yes.
I can see that. And what I'm doing is I have flip charts at the side and I'm drawing. So I'm working really hard to capture all that they're saying. And at the end, if you really look at it, there's so many patterns in there that says a lot about their cause. Hmm. There's passion and strength in there. And if you combine that, then most of the times I end up with 2 or 3 paragraphs of saying, you know, this is what you are. This is what your cause is. And everybody, you know, I did it, I think, just before summer. And I just started reading it out at the end of the day because there was a break in between. So I had time to write it down. And they started cheering. They started applauding.
Yes.
And I was like, I felt a little bit overwhelmed by that. But then I thought, oh, they recognize themselves in that.
That was so thinking, beautiful. Wow, they love me. Yeah. They really love me.
Yeah. No. They finally love me. But no, it's their own passion and strength that they love.
Yes. But it's a beautiful example of you helping to kind of help that, again, back to liberating potential, right? That's a beautiful example of tapping into their own energy, their own passions, their own strengths, and just holding up a mirror in a way that they are then celebrating themselves and because again, what's beautiful about that activity also is that you have two birds with one stone. You're also helping them connect, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. And it comes to also, I'm thinking, I've been a high school teacher for 5 years, teaching biology, my former work that I studied. The head of the school, he came up to me. I was just 3 weeks a teacher. And then he came up to me and he said, "So Rick, how is it going?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's really going really well." And he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, "Rick, make sure that the sweat is on the right back."
That's a great phrase.
I think that that's so powerful. So if I've been working really hard in a session, that's not a good sign. They have to be working really hard and doing the most of the work, because something has to happen within their organization or their team. And I'm the facilitator of the transformation.
Well, and I think that's a really important insight as well. I think at times I can feel super drained at the end of a day. And I oftentimes, I've never had words for that, but I think you just named it in a really, really nice way, making sure that the sweat is on the right back. I love the phrasing liberating potential, because again, you are the facilitator. You're creating the conditions for those three elements, right? Connect, cause, and create. You are the facilitator to help those emerge. They already exist in the system. You're
right.
Like a magician trying to help those things emerge and become more present in the minds of the participants. But just like the conversation I mentioned earlier,
right. They
need to do that work. You can't do that for them. And
yeah.
No number of PowerPoint slides or theoretical concepts are going to help that happen.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And this is, I think, also the work that we have to do as facilitators is we also run into our own ego. Our own ego wants to say, this is what I know, or this is so beautiful. You should also watch the world like this. Well, in the end, we need to be careful with that. And I think that's one of the tasks that we have. Yeah.
Well, I do want to make sure that we get to a conversation about Nudge, because I think it's the Nudge Global Impact Challenge.
Yes.
Would you talk a little bit about that, Rick? Because I went to the website and I was intrigued. I thought, wow,
right.
I hope my children can participate in something like this. It just seemed, at first glance, wonderful.
Wow, it would be great to have your children in, Scott. Please send them over. That would be great. Well, the Nudge Global Impact Challenge, I think it's a wonderful program. And many of my passions and background, I really feel that it all merges into this program. So Nudge is being founded by Jan van Betten. He was the former CEO of one of the largest European publishers.
Okay.
He had this high-end job. He had it all. He had his second house in Switzerland. And then he was walking around and he met his neighbor, who was a farmer in Switzerland. And the farmer said, "Well, I'm quitting." "Wow, you love your job, right, as a farmer?" He said, "Yeah, but I can't compete anymore with the big farm, big organizations." And Jan was shocked by that. And he talked on and then he dived into it. And he really understand how the system works with all the subsidiaries in Europe. I don't know how it is in America, but at least in Europe, we have a lot of subsidiaries for farmers. And he understood the system of how it worked. And he said, "Well, this is not right. We should do something about it. We should change the world to make it a more sustainable place."
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was around 2005, 2008, when nobody really talked about sustainability. It was really a fluffy thing that they talked about at the farm universities, like we have one in Holland called Wageningen as a university. And it was really fluffy and nobody really understood what sustainability was, which is totally different now, of course.
Yeah.
But then he started Nudge. And Nudge, of course, means a little push in the right direction. And it was really the idea of bringing sustainability into organizations, into society by bottom-up approaches. So really from the grassroots. And that's when it started. And they had beautiful initiatives, which really, had great impact, great results. And then also people asked them, "Well, can you teach us how to do this? Because in our big corporate organizations, we also want people who have this urge, this drive for sustainability." And then we started the Nudge Global Impact Challenge. And I think it's such a wonderful program because we have 70 till 120 young professionals between 25 35 years old. They all have a passion for sustainability, a passion to make impacts. They're high potentials. So they really, they have a history and they come from all over the world, different places, different organizations. And it's amazing what happens when you bring them together and if you connect them together. Yeah.
Would you tell me one story of something that stands out for you as a, where you even kind of just thought, wow, this is pretty incredible. Does something stand out for you?
Well, what stands out to me are the participants. Nutch really has a good sense of who to select. So some of the participants are corporate participants, so corporate sponsor this program, but we also have wildcard candidates. So this could be your kids saying, you know, I'm going to apply. And if you got selected, you just can go in without paying anything. And this is also because we see that, of course, a lot of people, especially in Africa, they can't afford to go to these kind of programs. And one of them is James Thuck Maje. I hope I've pronounced it well. He's from South Sudan, and he actually fled during the war there. He was 14 years old, and he was living in a refugee camp for a while. And then he went to the University of Toronto. He got a grant for that. And he started Rainmaker Enterprise. And it's such a beautiful organization because he has solar-powered water systems that he brings back to the South Sudan, and he builds them from city to city, from village to village. And he helps them with their food production. And if you would meet him, he's just this tall guy from Sudan. And he has such a liveliness. Some people have presence, you know that.
Oh, yes.
You also meet them at the ILA. You meet a lot of people with presence. Well, James is also one of them. It's amazing to meet him and to learn about his story and also to see how he connects people to his initiative to make even more impact with it.
Well, it sounds like he even, and again, one reason that I really enjoy your three C's, connect, cause, co-create. Or is it create? Is right. It create or co-create?
Well, I say create first because then also co-create is in there.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of ways. I mean, backwards planning is also such a good way of getting to creation, to really project yourself 4 or 5 years from now, and then really walking backwards to the now to see, so what do we have to do 3 months from there or 6 months from there, and then walk back. I think that's also a very powerful way to create together.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Rick, as we begin to wind down our time today, first of all, thank you. I mean, I've really, really enjoyed some of the insights that I've had even in the process of our conversation today. But I always wind down the dialogue with asking guests, what have you been consuming lately? What have you been reading or streaming? What's caught your attention? Now, it could have to do with what we've just discussed. It could have nothing to do with what we've just discussed. But what's something that's on your radar that's kind of caught your attention?
Right, yeah. So one thing that I've been looking at and being amazed about is How To with John Wilson. I think it's on HBO.
Okay.
So it's a documentary maker. He lives in New York.
Okay.
And it's wonderful because he has a very bad memory. So he memorizes his life by recording his life and really making notes into booklets about what he has been doing. So getting up at 7:30, eating my vegetables, etc. So he's taking notes of that. So he has this whole library from, I think, 30 years. Then he starts making these documentaries, but then he's going back saying, oh, this is a nice fragment of something that happens in New York, because he takes his camera wherever he goes. And I think it's so beautiful because it says a lot about real people coming together and what happens then, and the beautiful things that people can give to each other or the horrible things that people can do to each other.
Wow. Okay. So How To with
John Wilson.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Interesting. I've not heard of this. And so for listeners, that would be on HBO, or maybe now it's called Max in the United States. So you could check it out on Max. I have not heard of that. And it's a documentary. Is that accurate? Or a series?
It is. It is. It's a series of documentaries. So he takes a how-to. So how to split the bill in a restaurant. That's one of the things that he talks about. And the funny thing is that, so he starts with this question, but he ends up totally different places in the world. So with this how to split the bill, he ends up at a meeting of referees, because he thinks, well, these referees know how to do it. And you should really see this, because these referees, they mess up this whole meeting. They're not listening to each other at all. It's so funny.
Oh, well, I will look forward to checking that out. That is wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. I'm about to finish. I've been listening to the Elon Musk biography, Walter Isaacson. Ah. And oof, wow. Listening to that or reading that through the lens of leadership, it's just very, very interesting. It's very complicated, very complex individual. And it's such a fascinating read, Rick, because it's on one hand, I'm just in awe and inspired. And then on the other hand, kind of disgusted. It's hard to reconcile this individual. And so the humanity of it, it's messy and it's complex and it's just a very, very interesting read, a very interesting read about an individual with very large aspirations, with a very complex childhood and background, but in some ways repeating some of the terrible things that were done to him. Talk about, he's not concerned with connecting, but he's all about cause and all about creation. And there's little actual human connection that he's interested in. And so that's interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Or he isn't capable of.
Yes. Yes. I mean, because again, you know, so again, the complexity, a piece of that is that, you know, I don't know that he's formally been diagnosed, but he says that he has Asperger's. So then do you have to, you know, give him leeway in this instance because of that disability or that difference? I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting, you know, but he went into Twitter and the last part of the book is really just about that whole kind of transition where I think they fired 3/4 of the staff at Twitter in a very brutal way. Like, you know, the day before Thanksgiving in the United States, just very brutal. So it's just, it's a really interesting read from a leadership lens.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
True. Yeah. And it's also, I remember because I read a review about this book and also the way he bought X, Twitter, he also went in, he said, well, we have to find a new place for the servers. And they said, well, this takes about a couple of months. And they said, no, we can do it in a couple of weeks or a couple of days, he actually said. Yep. And then he just went in, he just pulled out all the wires, shipped them into, you know, some vans and then took them. And then Twitter was unstable for 3 months.
Yep. Right. You know, advancing us in so many ways, but then also, you know, in some cases, a little cavalier with the law and a little cavalier with ethics. And it's just a very, very interesting case study. So
it is.
Rick, it is so good to reconnect with you. Speaking of connection, and I just really, really appreciate the work that you're doing and helping organizations, helping teams, you know, liberating potential. I think that's what we're going to call the episode, liberating potential. And you are out there doing that work to try and help organizations and individuals do their best work. And you know what? That's awesome. That's absolutely wonderful.
Thank you so much, Kotz. Thank you for having me for this wonderful conversation. I have so many other questions for you and want to know more. Luckily, we will meet each other in Copenhagen in a couple of months.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
Yes.
I will give you a big hug, sir.
Looking forward to that. Thanks so much, Scott, for this.
Okay, be well.
You too.
In my adventures of producing this podcast, you know, there's just been some quotes and some phrases that people have used that have just really, really stood out. When Jonathan Reams said, "Leaders create the weather," or when Robert Livingston said, "When it comes to mental gymnastics, most of us are Olympic athletes," or Doug Lindsay shared the quote by Bob Hogan that who you are is how you lead. There's just so many. There's so many like that. And this phrasing, liberating potential, I don't know. That's just another beautiful way, Rick, of communicating what it is that you do and what many of us are trying to do. Create that space where we can liberate potential. It's in there. And how do we help individuals or teams or organizations tap into that potential, tap into that energy that exists that has not yet emerged or emerged to its fullest? Rick, thank you so much for the work that you do. Thank you so much for your exploration. And I'm so thankful for these incredible conversations that I get to have with incredible people like you, who are making a difference in our world. As always, thank you so much for checking in, everyone. For me, the practical wisdom here is, are you super clear on what you're trying to do? For Rick, liberating potential. And he has his three hallmarks that are helping him get there with teams. And do you have the same, your own operating principles to help you do your work? Thanks, everyone. Take care. Be well. You have just finished another episode of Practical Wisdom for Leaders with Scott Allen. To contact me, visit www.scottjallen.net or send me a note at scott@scottjallen.net. I can also be found on Twitter and LinkedIn, so let's connect. Now, if you have feedback, I'd love to hear it. And as always, thank you so much for listening. One final nod to our sponsors, the International Leadership Association and the Bowler College of Business at John Carroll University. And now, here's Kate's twin sister, Emily, with the outro.
You've been listening to Phronesis, Practical Wisdom with Scott Allen.